You are listening to an ADIS podcast.
Welcome to our session entitled Identification of a Patient Suitable for CAR T Therapy in the Outpatient Setting, a vodcast and case example. My name is Ronan Foley. I'm a hematologist and professor at Jurevinsky Hospital and Cancer Center in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. I'm joined by my colleague, Dr. John Curavilla, who is at the Princess Margaret Cancer Center in Toronto, Canada. Today, we're talking about outpatient management of CAR T cell therapy. And I would just start with two aspects that led to our commitment to setting up CAR T exclusively in the outpatient setting. The first was that we were one of two sites in Canada that participated in the pivotal Juliet trial, looking at the Kymriah product published by Steven Schuster. Interestingly, in that trial, even back in the beginning, outpatient care was allowable on that trial. And because of our experience with outpatient autografts, we embraced that. And in our commercial setting, have continued to have outpatient CAR T cell therapy. I think the second important thing that happened over time was that as we looked at real world evidence using 4-1BB products, there was an interesting reduction in side effects, such that in the Juliet trial, grade 3-4 CRS was around 23%, but in the real world, it plummeted down to just 5%. ICANS was even lower. And so I think with that safety profile, we felt very comfortable in proceeding to an outpatient setup. And I'll just ask you, John, what's your sense about why did we see a reduction in some of these important side effects?
Yeah, I think there are a couple of reasons for that, Ronan. I mean, you know, first and foremost, we had increasing experience with managing these patients coming from the clinical trials, you know, data in certain settings, and maybe this was initially more with CD28 products, but showing that earlier administration of tocilizumab or corticosteroids could be done and could be done safely and wouldn't result in any impairment of the effectiveness of CAR T cells. And so, you know, that along with, I think, some standardization of assessment for CRS and ICANS and harmonizing grading criteria, that really gave clinicians a lot of confidence with managing these patients and seeing that data that was very reassuring about lower rates of high-grade toxicity.
The important reasons to consider this, certainly bed capacity and resource issues. And with so many CAR T newer indications, one can envision there will be a lot of CAR T as well as BiTE activity happening. Cost, there is a paper referenced here by Lineman in JAMA 2020, suggesting that up to 40% cost saving can be achieved by establishing an outpatient CAR T cell therapy. So again, cost as always being an important thing. I think there is an element of patient preference, and certainly patients prefer to be sleeping in their own bed and being managed as an outpatient if they can. But the really critical thing here is that you have a dedicated, suitable caregiver that can take on all the tasks, and most importantly, being able to recognize early signs of toxicity to immediately seek medical attention. In terms of efficacy, I think CAR T therapy is very exciting for its remission rates and the very durable, likely cured responses. And of course, that would happen whether they're outpatient or inpatient. I think the elephant in the room here is the adverse events, and specifically the immune-specific adverse events that you want to be able to recognize very early and act upon them. And so strategies, aside from having a very good caregiver, additional strategies are being looked at to monitor heart rates and temperatures in the outpatient setting so you can get an early recognition of when problems are starting. And I think in the setup, really, as we're finding in CAR T in general, identification, patient selection is a critical thing, that we engage a multidisciplinary team to be part of the outpatient CAR T infrastructure, this is, as said, is an extension from what we do with autografts. And then the feasibility of outpatient administration, I think we've been able to show. And of course, there are publications to confirm that. developing. So to talk about outpatient CAR T cell therapy and to discuss with John, we have a case, and the case is of a patient in their 50s, so somewhat young, refractory diffuse large B GC subtype. They present with 4B disease, and they have a MYC translocation identified by FISH. Limited comorbidities, some hypertension previous on ACE inhibitor. And with that, John, I would just ask you in this presentation, where do you see the FISH MYC mutation fitting into this patient's care?
So this is one of those patients you may need to worry a little bit more about, Ronan. Increasingly, FISH has been used to stratify patients for treatment. And MYC does potentially identify a higher risk subset of patients. Historically, this even a single translocation might have been associated with inferior outcome. What we see now, typically in the modern practice of managing large cell lymphoma, we're largely being driven by two factors. And so, if these are patients that have either dual expression by immunohistochemistry of MYC along with BCL2, typically seen in ABC subtype, those are patients that we know may have an inferior outcome with treatment. But the patient population that we still continue to worry a little bit more about are patients that not only have a MYC translocation, but typically have a BCL2 translocation, so the so-called double hit. That might have implications for how you give primary treatment. You might prefer a regimen like dose-adjusted EPOCR. But in a patient like this, you'll often be using other clinical variables to drive your decision-making about number of cycles of treatment and other things, looking at still trying to give curative standard frontline treatment.
At presentation, the patient presented with obstructive uropathy, widespread adenopathy, core biopsies confirmed a diffuse large B phenotype. The Ki-67 was 50 to 60%, so probably not a high grade or dual hit, as John suggests. The MYC was positive in 20 to 30% of cells. I think when it comes to CAR T therapy, knowing that the lesions are CD19 positive, in my mind is important, although not absolutely necessary. But we certainly find that immunohistochemistry for CD19 can be variable. But using flow cytometry can give you a nice sturdy signal of CD19 positivity. So a diagnosis of diffuse large B, advanced stage. The PET scan at diagnosis showed extranodal disease, kidney, pancreas, bladder, and colon. So a very certainly extranodal disease, which would be quite worrisome. Elevated LDH. I think a diagnostic LP is required. Not sure if I'd use CNS prophylaxis, but at least want to ensure that there's no tumor in the CSF. Okay, so this patient immediately required a nephrostomy tube and high-dose corticosteroids with tumor lysis monitoring, but then once stable, proceeded to six cycles of R-CHOP with interim CT. Unfortunately, the end of therapy PET scan showed regrowth of peritoneal sites indicating primary disease. And so at that point, transitioned to salvage therapy with platinum-based GDP, which is what we use here in Canada. The plan at that point was to head towards an autograft. After two cycles of GDP, the PET had a mixed response, and unfortunately, one area was showing signs of progression. And so at that point, the patient was pivoted from autograft towards CAR T cell therapy, and Kymriah or Tisagenlecleucel was chosen for this patient. John, can you just at your site, when you have a patient who's heading to auto, pivoting to CAR T, obviously you want to move quickly, but what sort of things come to mind in that scenario?
Yeah, I mean, it's always a tough conversation, Ronan, to in one aspect have to tell a patient that they just went through, 6 weeks of therapy, and unfortunately it didn't accomplish what it was supposed to accomplish in terms of generating response and then being able to present stem cell mobilization and moving towards a curative auto potentially. But the other advantage to the clinician in this setting is this is a patient that's known to you. You've got imaging available. Your transplant team knows the patient, And if, like in many of our practices, that team is often very closely integrated with the people that give CAR T cell therapy as well, the pivot for the clinician is straightforward. So your imaging is up to date, you're aware of the patient, you've probably done baseline studies to reassure yourself about their fitness to go through with a more intensive therapy. You might actually have an apheresis booking already for those peripheral blood stem cells and may still be able to use that with a manufacturing slot to get your CAR T cells made. So knowing about the patient a little earlier always makes this easier, and it's a more controlled situation in a way than that patient that may have been sent in from a local transplant program to you for CAR T, where you have to get up to speed much more quickly, as well as meet the patient and try to establish that therapeutic relationship.
Anything you can do to reduce the time to get to CAR T is absolutely critical. Now, thinking about this case, and specifically, is this a patient that we should be doing as an outpatient? There's a few factors to consider. And obviously, and the same is true for CAR T in general. Ideally, we're looking at patients with a low tumor bulk with a normal LDH, and they're not the patients who are having fast-paced growth. Also patients that are asymptomatic from the disease that we've identified by PET. John brought up an extremely important point about early referrals. In this case, really, it's as early as it can be because it's pivoting from the auto in the same institution, but sometimes they're coming from one institution to another. ECOG is critical. In this case, ECOG is zero. We do check the inflammatory state of patients with CRP and ferritin at least, sometimes other biomarkers. We have a very good look at the caregiver, whether the caregiver is going to be able to serve all the roles that are required in an outpatient setting. This patient hasn't had a lot of prior therapy and a normal platelet count. Where we get nervous or perhaps pause, perhaps with some of the older patients, if their functional capacity is somewhat reduced, if there's a lot of comorbidities, we may elect to have the person stay in hospital. And anything that would point towards a risk for ICANS also may make us think about patients staying in. We do like to look at the T cell fitness of patients in general, but that really doesn't apply to the decision of inpatient or outpatient, more so the decision to move forward with CART. So again, patient selection is absolutely critical in CAR T therapy in general, but sort of an added layer to this when you're thinking about the outpatient. So we are seeking patients that are ideally set up for this. Now, in terms of this patient, we did decide to go outpatient. The patient was asymptomatic, so we did not need bridging. So heading into it, hemoglobin 119, white count 2.8, platelets 123, a normal LDH, normal inflammatory markers, and a borderline creatinine at 49 GFR. The ejection fraction was 68%. Really, there were no comorbidities heading in, ECOG zero. This patient lives out of town, so they were booked into a hotel close to our institution with daily visits from days 1 to 10. Helped by their caregiver, who in this case was excellent. The arrangements were made by the multidisciplinary team. Patient received LD in the standard FC dosing as goes along with the Kymriah product, and on day zero received 2.5 times 78 per kilogram of CTL019 T cells. No problems with the infusion. Again, of note, historically, there has been some data from Schuster and the team that higher doses of CAR T cells, because there is a range up to 6, may be associated with more toxicity. But in this case, this dose of cells is fine. On day plus 2 with daily visits, patient developed new neck swelling. And CT demonstrated a new clot. We have central lines in place, and the patient required Fragmin. And I just asked John, how would that have, as a clinician, what would you have thought about this and the ability to remain as an outpatient?
Yeah, so I think every time you're assessing that patient daily in the clinic, there's that decision of what has changed and what may be feasible in terms of managing someone in the outpatient setting. So I think the key question you'd shown earlier on a previous slide that blood counts had been pretty good at baseline, and I'd hope that the platelet count was still in a decent range. There's tons of experience, as everyone knows, in being able to manage venous thrombosis in the outpatient setting. With low molecular weight heparin or other agents. And so I think you could feel pretty confident at this point in letting that patient go home with close follow-up and the usual warnings about monitoring for bleeding now on top of the other things to watch out for around the CAR T procedure.
And I agree with John, that's exactly what happened. On day plus four, they did get a temperature of 38.1, which of course we all know is the hallmark of potential CRS. But of course, the other issue is if they're neutropenic, could it be a fever? So this was really the test for us in this scenario. I had a temp, an hour later it had come down, no hypotension, patient wasn't symptomatic otherwise. It maybe made a grade one CRS. And the markers were not really tremendously elevated at that point. We decided, because the patient's already on prophy antibiotics, to leave it at that, but with really aggressive surveillance while the patient was back home. So we made that point. John, how would you have seen this playing out?
Agreed, Ronan. I think this is one of the most common situations we're now dealing with in that patient. Is this just routine fever post chemotherapy, potentially associated with an infection? Could this be the beginnings of CRS and ICANS? And I think even with that clot, is it just a little inflammation potentially from that even? And so the reassuring improvement very quickly thereafter, being able to monitor for a couple hours in the clinic, not associated with other worrisome symptoms. Yeah, I think you'd feel pretty comfortable letting that patient go home again with close monitoring, that caregiver at home, and the ability to see them more quickly and certainly reevaluate them the next day as needed.
Would you give them a dose of Tosi and send them home?
I think that's always the question. I think with this specific example, when you look at the short duration of the fever, it only hit 38.1, nothing else to suggest any organ compromise or blood pressure issue. The markers as well, seem to be pretty low at baseline and were continuing to be well managed. I think you'd feel quite comfortable withholding therapy and observing.
So throughout the journey, no ICANS. The ICE scores were 10 out of 10 throughout. This is a patient who standardly would receive acyclovir, fluconazole, levo up to day 30. They'd stay on ceftriaxone and acyclovir for up to a year. This case remained as an outpatient, days 1 to 10, transitioned to Monday, Wednesday, Friday to day 21, and then actually back to their local referring institution by day 22. Just note there, and there's a reference for the a recent paper by Park in Nature Medicine looking at anakinra as a potential prophy for ICANS, but certainly in this case, that wasn't ever an issue. In terms of outcome, a day 30 PET, which we like to use, had a near CMR. There was one lesion that was graded 3-4, probably a Duval 3, but certainly a remarkable response. The patient, of course, has since gone on to be in CR for over 2 years. The IgG dropped a bit, so it went under 4 grams. So the patient was started on prophylactic gamma globulin for the first 6 months, which we set up at home. So this case highlights the feasibility of outpatient and aspects of the case, which are, as we know in CAR T, extremely important. The LDH, the ECOG, inflammatory state were all very important. I'll just mention other patients who entirely exclusively were outpatient in our setting. Of course, there's been many more. This was just in our beginning. But again, patients who really had no CRS or ICANS with the 4-1BB Kymriah product, they all had low LDHs. They had low inflammatory markers. And interestingly, of the patients shown here, I'm showing you five cases, all very kind of diverse in a way. Four out of five, 80% of them were in a complete metabolic remission by day 30. So interestingly, picking patients for outpatient may actually be picking patients who destined to do very well at the same time. So in summary, you really have to think about your setup in your institution, and you have to set it up with outpatient in mind. The points of entry for education as patients come back, does the emergency department, are they educated? Is the ICU educated? The caregiver is absolutely critical if you're going to do this. And that very much is working with our social work colleagues to assess the caregiver. You have to have dedicated bed on hold, as we did in autograft. Patient selection and early referrals are highly recommended. And as John and I have said in the past, speed wins. So you really want to get the CAR T cells into the patient as soon as possible, and really have a time efficient process. I will bring this session now to a close. I want to thank my colleague, Dr. John Kuravilla, for joining me today and for his important insights. I'd like to also thank the organizers for setting this up. Thank you very much.
You are listening to an ADIS podcast. You can listen to more podcasts by subscribing to ADIS Podcast with your preferred podcast provider, or by visiting the journal website. For a full list of declarations, including funding and author disclosure statements, please read the article on the journal website.